She's a researcher in the area of music performance and teaching and learning. She's recently completed her Masters of Applied Science degree at the University of Sydney. Her final thesis examined teaching and learning in higher music education. Prior to her master's degree, she graduated with a Bachelor of Music from the Sydney Conservatorium of Music.
Oh,
Laura is... That's her past.
That's my past. Okay.
Laura is pursuing a PhD in Toronto, Canada, examining human learning and ways to improve teaching and learning in higher education.
Wow.
So tonight she's going to talk to us about how humans learn.
So broad.
Wow. Oh my God.
Broad topic. You don't know if I'm good yet. I may not be good.
We'll give you confidence first.
Thank you. Thank you. If you want to come closer, please come closer. Because we're going to be a bit collaborative. It's a big topic.
Come on,
right? Yeah, come, please. Please.
Plenty of seats.
Look, you're all going to be talking in this class. It's not just going to be me. But I'm the teacher now. You're allowed to.
Let me leave him. He's professor in there.
Please. Please come closer. Please do. Now, look, if I say something and it doesn't make sense, tell me.
I'll grab your chair.
Thank you very much.
Because human learning is a difficult topic.
Mm.
Yeah? So many components. But, funnily enough, we rarely think about how humans learn.
And
you think
like
we do?
Laura, I would like to have Laura talking about how children learn.
Yeah. And we're going to get there. We're going to get there soon. Don't worry. And I'm going to keep an eye on the time because it's a big subject. Before we get to how children learn, we have to think about how humans learn.
Yep.
Why? Give whatever answer, nothing's wrong.
Children are humans.
Because we are humans.
Perfect. What else?
Humans that come from children.
Humans, yeah. Well, yeah. Yes. That's elder children. Yes. What else? Sorry? Copy, yeah, it's all the same.
Because we humans actually is the curiosity.
Curiosity, I like that. Woo-hoo. Human curiosity, and human curiosity is really important.
Mm.
That's a really important aspect. Okay, is there a difference between what we teach, all teachers in this room? Are we all teachers?
Mm.
Becoming teachers,
we're
teachers of
teachers
some sort, teachers and students. Okay. Is there a difference between what we teach and how we teach?
Mm.
This is all teaching, not just religious subjects. Is there a difference? What is different?
Skill.
The skills are different. Mm. Yeah.
Knowledge.
The method.
Knowledge is different. Yeah. Methods are different.
Our passion. Our experience.
Yeah.
How we convey.
That's right. That's right. Okay, so say you're teaching me, even a child. I can be a child. You're teaching me. Hello.
Sorry.
Come on in. No, that's totally fine. We've only just started.
Thank you.
So I'm about to tell them, you're teaching me how to pick up a cup.
Mm.
That's what you're going to teach me. I'm a young child. Now we're talking about children between 5 and 12.
Yes.
Yeah? Okay. Funnily enough, children between the ages of 5 and 12, the learning is very similar.
Mm. Oh.
It's very similar. You think it wouldn't be, because there's a certain level of maturity once we hit 11, 12, and things start to change.
Mm.
A lot of things change, but a lot of it's similar. So you're teaching me how to pick up this cup.
Mm.
Now, the content, what you're teaching me,
mm-hmm.
is just how to pick up a cup. That's what you're teaching me.
Basically.
Okay? Basically is what you're teaching me. And the content is going to be how I move my hand. If it's hot, you pick it up like this. If it's cold, you pick it up like this. You might drink it like this. That's what you're teaching me.
Mm.
But there is a big part that we forget about when we learn, a huge part, and it's how we teach. And a lot of the things I say are going to seem so simple, and you're going to sit there and go, why don't I consider that? We're not taught that, sadly. We're not taught very simple things about human learning, and they apply especially to children, especially. It's a little bit like baking. There's a little bit of everything in there. There are certain amounts of things, But there's a recipe to every single person.
Yep.
And every single child. Everyone's different. One may need more flour, one may need more milk. So one may not need milk, you've got to let them put the milk in themselves. Everyone's different. Mm. For example, with me, I found that I don't like being told what to do too much.
I can tell.
I just like you showing me. Show me how to pick up a, can you show me how to pick up my my cup? Could you please
just
show me?
With your fingers.
No, show me.
You
show
can
me.
Do it anyhow you like it, because I'm not going to tell you how to do it.
Okay, you're not going to tell me how. Okay.
Just hold it with two fingers.
Hold it with two fingers.
Yeah, because it's not hot. It's
okay.
Just nice and warm.
Just nice, so I just do that.
Whatever.
Nice. Now, this is a very simple thing. For me, I'm 26. It's simple. I'd hope that I can pick up a cup by now. Yeah. Sometimes, maybe not. But for children, certain things are harder, and depending on their age. Okay? At my age, some things are harder for me to pick up. I wish I could meditate. I'll get there one day. It takes time for me. It takes a bit more instruction, and it takes a bit more modeling, like what you just did for me. You gave me an example. You demonstrated. I might need a little bit more feedback. That's another thing. Feedback. How about that? Then I need something called perceptual training. We forget that. What's perceptual training? Well, what I hear, what I see, and what I feel. Okay? So, instruction, modeling, feedback, perceptual training. They seem like simple things, right? Yeah? We're never taught to think about how we're instructed. We're never taught to think about how we give demonstrations. We're never taught to think about the type of feedback. There are different types of feedback. Lots of different types. Yeah? So what I'm going to tell you tonight has got to do with general human learning, yes, and it is very applicable to children because they're learning something brand new. And learning something brand new is great because you've got all of this scope as teachers, so many different ways that you can teach them. Rather than as they get a bit older, like a 12-year-old, maybe they're at a different level, they've learned many things before that, okay, you've got to think a little differently. They've experienced learning for a little while, come that point. So, this whole area that I'm talking about today is something called motor learning. Motor learning is a big part of research on how humans learn.
M-O-T-O-R.
And if you're worried that you're falling behind with things I'm saying, I'm very happy to send you all something at the end. That way, if you think that you're better listening and you don't like writing, leave the writing, okay? I'll be very happy to send you something to pass on. So something called motor learning. So when I was a child growing up learning music, because this is where it all came from for me, it did come from music, yeah. I had so many different teachers, and every teacher taught me differently. Every single one. And I wonder, and I thought, maybe they're all teaching me differently because I learnt differently at different ages. That could have been it. Might have been it. But that teacher also taught me the way they had been taught. Or they taught me the way they thought was good for them. Yeah? We've got to do it the other way around. What's good for them? But what's tricky with teachers like you and the teachers that you'll become is that you're dealing with groups of children. You're not always one-on-one. You're probably in classes of 15 or who knows how many children. You've got to learn to accommodate for everyone.
Yeah.
But every single one of these kids works differently and learns differently.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give you something that for some reason hasn't entered our education system yet, not broadly. It's getting there. It's been in sports since the 70s. And sport has just
gone
crazy. And the arts has fallen behind a bit.
Yeah.
But I guarantee you these simple things that I'm talking about and that I'm going to take you through, instruction, modeling or demonstrating, feedback, perceptual training, and there's a fifth one, a big one that I haven't mentioned yet, motivation are the five key elements of all human learning, no matter what age. I guarantee you. I guarantee you. And as teachers, if you start to remember these five elements, it will help you in teaching groups, no matter how big, no matter how small. One-on-one, to a lecture room of 30 or more, it will help. Because it all depends on how you add the ingredients and how you let the student add the ingredients. So we're going to take a step back for a minute. What do you think, what do you want that child to do after your lesson or at the end of their learning?
Behave,
what do you want
well,
them
behave well.
To behave your,
and
to
be
behave
the best
well.
Version of themselves.
Brilliant.
That's, and contribute to the society.
That's fantastic. And do you want them to be able to do that on their own?
Yeah.
Within. Like
perfect.
Self-awareness. And
yes.
Yeah.
Perfect. You want them to be autonomous.
Yeah.
That's the big word. Autonomy. If there's anything you aim to do in your teaching, it's autonomy. Give a child autonomy. When you give that child autonomy under good guidance, they will want to learn for the rest of their lives. I guarantee you. It's something we forget. And our education system, in general schooling, lacks that. That's why so many people may not want to learn anymore. I'm not just talking about learning in universities. I mean learning in general. Learning about how to be a good person. Learning about how to help our society, learning to be more of themselves or to learn more of what they're able to do. Autonomy, big thing. So when I was studying music, I found that I'd have a lesson with my teacher, and I had lots of different teachers for lots of different things, several times a day, a few times a week. I found that I'd go home on my own and I'd practice and I'd really struggle. I'd struggle with my homework. I'd struggle to practice singing on my own. I majored in opera, so I wasn't working well on my own. When I went off to do a performance, I thought, I have to see my teacher first. I have to have an hour lesson at least a few days before I perform. At least a few days. Otherwise, I'd panic. Yeah? Right? You felt it. You're a musician. You get it. Okay? You don't want a student of any subject to feel like that. You want a student to feel confident. Right? Mm. So when we think of those five key things, we've got to deliver them in a very specific way. And it suits all human beings. So let's go to the very last one I mentioned. And we're going to put it all the way at the beginning because it's the most important one. It starts with M. What
motivation.
Was it?
Motivation.
Brilliant.
Motivation.
See, I told you to sit at the front.
You always know regardless of where he sits.
Yeah. Motivation is so important. I don't want to pick up that unless that thing, the content of this, is going to help me.
Yummy.
It's yummy. And it's hydrating. Yeah? So a child isn't going to want to learn what you're teaching them unless there's a reason to do it. Any human being. I came here tonight because I love teaching teachers how to teach. All types. I love giving them this piece of research that's so simple and it's been looked at for many years, but no one thinks about it because it works too quickly, you see? And people will be out of work, but that's a whole other conversation.
Talking about other things.
So, motivation, we need it. We need it. How would you give a child motivation to learn what you're teaching them?
Positive reinforcement.
Positive reinforcement. Bingo. Mm-hmm. What else?
Interesting.
To keep it interesting?
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely.
Give them time.
Give them time. I like that. I like that. I haven't heard that one before. But it does. It is important in motivation.
Let,
absolutely.
Let them know why we are learning it.
Thank you.
The
big
drive.
One. Yeah. Remember that comment. Let them know why they're learning it for when we talk about instruction. What else? What other ways? There's a very common one that's been used in human learning.
Child-centered?
Child-centered? Mm-hmm. To keep it, yes, absolutely. And at their level. Yeah. The thing that we use a lot, we use reward-driven motivation, don't we? We do that a lot in children. It's been used.
It's more for dog, right, if you think about it.
Yes. Look. There is a lot, if you go off to do any other form of teacher education, they will say that reward-driven and punish-driven motivation works. It works, however, we also know now in a lot of teaching educational research that sometimes it's not good when they're older. They don't do things unless they're given a reward.
Yeah.
They don't do things because they're worried that they'd be punished.
Mm-hmm.
So giving stickers, giving food, it helps if it's the last resort.
Mm.
We don't cut it off. It's the last resort, right? It's like sports players. They say, you'll get a free massage if you do that. On just on your right leg. That's the last reward, okay? Motivation is really important, and you can deliver that to children in so many different ways.
Mm.
Tell them how it helps them do things that they love to do.
Their interests.
Yeah. Focus on their interests. Now, of course, a big class, you might have to generalize it, but maybe you go around and ask some children, we're going to do this because it helps you like this. What would it do for you? What would it do for you? What do you think? And if you can think of something, really hold on to it. Okay? So motivation. You need motivation. Number two, instruction. Instruction is a very interesting thing. Teaching in human existence, as far as we know it, has relied a lot upon master-apprentice. We learn from a master, right? And we listen to everything they have to offer. As a musician, you'll know that one very well. We now know that instruction, there is a certain amount that we should give. Sometimes it's dependent on every child. But when you're dealing with a big class, the safest way to deliver instruction is to keep it short and to keep it simple. And that's not just children, that's all the way to adulthood and throughout your life, especially when you're learning something new. You just modeled something for me before. Sorry, what's your name?
Bing.
Okay, you modeled how to pick up this cup, yes? You didn't give me any instruction. You gave me a little bit, and that was great.
A demonstration.
Yeah, and a demonstration. But that's all. You didn't say you do it like this, you do it like this, and this is how we do it, and then we do it like this. Some people do it like this, and then we go on like this, and I'm just waiting there going, am I actually going to pick up this cup at any time? Right? You gave me only what I needed. Now, I'm here giving you a talk, so I'm going to yap on and talk and talk and talk. This is a different setting. But when you're working with children, give them a little bit, because what we found is the best thing for children and for adults, but the best thing for children is to let them explore things on their own.
Mm.
Yeah?
Yeah, and let them fail.
That's it. And I'll tell you why failing is important very soon. Well done. Yeah.
Can I share with you a story? You know, in the West, you know, we actually teach our kids, you know, like, for example, you know, when we actually go, this is actually the story was told, that, you know, when this an adult and a child, right, was in the bush, and, you know, our Western, you know, and there's actually a set of footprints and a pattern, you know, on the sand or on the earth, and our Western ways of teaching is that the adult would say, yes, that is a snake. And the snake is actually going that way. Can you see? Can you see? That's actually the pattern, you know, and whatever. But the Aboriginal and Aboriginal way of teaching is that they let the child be curious. And they actually ask the child the question.
Yes.
What do you think that is?
Yes.
Where do you think that goes?
This is beautiful. So everything I'm telling you, we've known this. We've known all of this, but we've lost it.
Mm.
Now, that conversation will take hours. I could explain that to you and why we've gotten here and the whole world wanting things faster and thinking this works.
Mm.
It's a whole other ball game. But what I'm teaching you now, you're right, we've known it for a very, very, very long time. A very long time. Thank you for sharing that. It's true. It's true. So letting children explore as much as possible is so important. Keeping it simple and keeping it very clear. Another thing in your instruction to consider is, depending on the stage in their learning or the level that they're at, your instruction, your course content, has to reflect that. So how difficult is it?
Mm.
How difficult is what you're teaching them? As teachers, we think everything's sort of the same level, or we think things are easy because we've done it for so long. But considering how difficult something is really important. If you give a child something too hard in the beginning, even that little bit, going back later to something that's easy, they may not be able to do. Mm-hmm. Because their mind's so busy thinking about that thing that for some reason they can't do. It's like, I can play Mozart so well, but I went to Bach and it seemed easy, but it's just, I can't do it. I'm not ready yet. It's too difficult. And because I really want to achieve that, now that I've seen something even more amazing, can, in my opinion, I'm focusing on that so much. And then I start to fail, and I fail a lot, and I don't understand why. So what's happening? I'm losing my motivation and my confidence. That's right. That's right. So instruction is really important. So what else is coming up after that? Modeling. Demonstrating. Now, what would you demonstrate? Is there anything that in particular that you would demonstrate in your topic? Perhaps. It may not be. That's okay.
Learn by example. We carry ourselves how we expect them to be. Like respect, for example.
Right. Okay, okay, that's important. That's important. So would you ever do group tasks, maybe? Your area, yeah, modeling?
Yeah.
Okay, modeling is really important. Like what you saw here in the example we gave before, sometimes modeling will serve you if you go, I've got all these instructions to give, and I know that keeping it simple and clear is important, but I feel like I need to give all that instruction. It's important. You'll come across that. You go, I've got to teach this, and it's all really relevant. But I know that if I give all of that to a child, it's a bit too much.
Mm.
Whatever, 5 to 12. Sometimes it's too much. So you have to think, well, what other ingredients do I add in? And that's when we start incorporating things. If maybe there's a point where you can model something, give it and see how it goes. Don't keep on overloading with instruction. It's very easy to do that as teachers because we know so much about what we're teaching, right? And we genuinely want them to learn, but sometimes we tip over and it's very easy. So modeling, it's handy. Some people don't like it and some do, but incorporating a little bit is always great because they can watch you, they can hear you, yeah? Sometimes they can feel it depending on the task, what you're teaching, maybe not in your subject, in mine definitely. Okay, modeling is important. Now we're going to come up to a big one, feedback. What do we give feedback for?
Positive.
Improve.
To improve, positive feedback. What else do we give feedback for?
It's all about the learning outcome and objectives, right?
That's quite the, it's a very good comment.
What did you say?
Learning outcomes. Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad you said that. We'll bring that up in a minute. Learning outcomes. Okay. How about this? I'm teaching you all of this right now, but you're not learning anything.
We're reconnecting with
isn't
the knowledge.
Isn't that funny? You, thank you. You are acquiring things. And that, with children, is so important for you to remember. When you are teaching children in a classroom, they're not learning. It's one of the biggest misconceptions in education around the world, where we think this immediate connection that I'm having with every single one of you in this room means that you're all learning. You're not learning. I'm giving you things that you yourself can take away later and go, oh yeah, this might work. No, this, I'm not sure if that works. Or I'm going to slowly practice this and try and learn how to do this. Yeah, you are going to learn how to do that. You will learn that later. And that's where feedback has a big role to play. Because how is a child going to go home and know that what they're doing is right or wrong, or correct or incorrect, or is there a correct and incorrect? Whoa. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Feedback's really important. So there's something that in research, in education research, and in applied science and human learning, we call the long one, an internal reference of correctness. And as teachers, you're training children how to build an internal reference of correctness, their own guide, their own sense of them knowing when they've done something wrong or right. Of them knowing when something is correct or incorrect. And especially of them knowing when there is no right or wrong.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's okay if it doesn't. Sorry? Yes. Yes. I'll give you an example. Give you an example. So, I learned how to sing. Singing is a very personal, it's a very personal instrument, right? Very, very personal instrument. And I was learning how to sing in 8 different languages.
Wow.
In my undergraduate. We had to learn 8 languages. So I had, my teacher really needed to give me ways that when I was at home, I could hear and I could physically feel when I was doing something right or wrong. And for children, when they're writing, perhaps, they have to know if is what they wrote right or wrong.
The sentence or whatever.
Yeah, or the sentence structure, whatever it is that you're teaching them. It's applicable to all subjects. So my teacher had to give me methods and ways of detecting that myself so that I can learn at home.
Ooh.
Because in the classroom, we only acquire. Bingo. Good. So my teacher gave me 2 types of feedback. There are 2 types of feedback that we give human beings. One is called knowledge of results. The teacher tells you when you're right or when you're wrong, when you're correct and when you're incorrect. And that's important. That's definitely important. But for an early learner, for children, one of the most important type of feedback is called knowledge of performance. So my singing teacher, instead of telling me, Laura, that ah vowel was wrong. You have to sing ah, not ah. You have to sing ah. And I'm like, I can't hear it. So instead of saying that was right and that was wrong, and I'm going, I don't know the difference, he said, Laura, you just did this, and you did it like that. What do you think you just did? And I went, oh, I actually have to think about what I did. Right. And I started to think, and I'm like, I think I did it, I think I did it like, yeah, I did it like, And he's like, yeah, I heard that too. Should we give it another go and see what happens? And we did it again. And he's like, yeah, that was right that time. What did you do? Because I thought you went like this. And I'm like, yeah, I think I went like that. Well, no, I didn't. I went like this. That's singing. A lot of this. And that is called knowledge of performance, because he is showing me and helping me start to realize what I'm doing. So what did you just write there? Oh, I wrote this. Why did you write that? Because I thought of this. The child might say, I don't know, we're making up a scenario, right? The teacher goes, oh, okay. Well, maybe if you did it like this, then it would work. The child can actually look at what they've done and start going, oh, that makes a bit more sense. Instead of going, that's wrong, and the child's like, what did I do? I don't know what I did wrong. I thought I tried my best. And that child's like, I did something wrong. Oh, no, it's all wrong. I don't know what I did. And what goes down? Motivation. Yeah. So how you deliver feedback is so important, because one, you want that child to definitely maintain their confidence. Definitely maintain their confidence. And two, you want them to be able to start to pick when something may not be right on their own, because that builds, starts with A, autonomy. Right? That student's not going to be reliant on you all the time as they start to develop their skills and their knowledge. Okay? But with you, I'm guessing if you've got an 11 or a 12-year-old, you may refer them to something to read, or you may tell them something else. You may give them an extra explanation rather than constant yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. With children, if they're doing things wrong a bit too much and you've already said no quite a bit, then maybe you've got to rethink how you deliver that task. Maybe you can think of a group activity to do. Here's a really cool fact, really cool one. So I will learn better how to, if I'm really nervous, I will learn much better how to pick up a cup of water when I'm with someone who's of a similar age, sometimes also gender, also learning the same thing. It's been proven time and time again that A human being will learn better if they're with someone of similar demographical, you know, status, age, gender, whatever else you can think. We learn better. We found that. It's why...
Boys' school.
Sorry?
Like boys' school, girls' school.
Yeah, well, that's actually where it all came from. It's where it all came from. Now, in terms of gender, it's been suggested, and in some types of learning, yes. In your area, I don't think gender is as important from what I've witnessed.
Religious.
It's not important at all. Mm. Age is definitely important.
Mm. Oh.
So if you've got a group, if you can get a group of 5 and 6 year olds together, and you can get another group of 7 to 9 together and get them doing different activities and watching each other, how they do it, brilliant. It's such a good thing. Such a good thing. You can try gender if you wish. That's been more proven in adults. It's been seen more in adults. So that's really, really fun, especially in if you're finding that these kids aren't picking things up that well and that they are doing things wrong a lot or not always getting it. Group activities, same age group, great. Speed to work. Now, the other thing was perceptual training. And we said that it's about how what we hear, what we see, what we feel. Now, in your type of teaching, what will be the most important thing? Is it what they see? What do you think? You tell me.
It can be trying to sharpen their sensory.
Yep.
Perceptual skill.
Yeah,
so,
what
mindfulness,
sensory?
Mindfulness.
Uh-huh.
We can try to get them to see more clearly, hear more. The more subtle sounds, feel the more subtle feelings.
Brilliant. Brilliant. So how would you train them to do that?
More attentive.
Oh, attention's so important. Yeah. It's got to do with feedback as well.
Mm.
In knowledge of performance, so when you're telling them what they did, you've got to ask them questions too. So what about, what did you feel?
And then correct them.
There you go. See how we're adding ingredients slowly? Mixing and matching, a bit more milk, a bit more flour. A bit more, I don't have milk, but you know, some people. So perceptual training, what did you hear? What did you feel? What did you see? Describe it to me. There's no point in letting a child bottle everything up in their mind, especially a big class. The more you can get these children talking to you, better. Because it keeps their attention on you and what you're teaching them. The more you give a child, the more it's going to go in here, right? And they're just going to be thinking and 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 just keeps going. You have to let it out one way or another. And feedback and perceptual training are two of the best ways to do it. I'll show you a few confused faces. I understand. This is a lot to talk about in the time I have.
Yeah.
And there are so many more recommendations.
Yes,
but if you can but if you can grasp these elements I'm giving you and start to have fun with them. Give a bit more instruction or give a few more models or give different types of feedback. Yeah? It's really, really important. Whatever you do, make sure that they're active. Make sure that they're active. Don't let them be passive for too long. So if you're going to go off and talk about something else for a little while that may not be relevant, make sure it's under 20% of your lesson. Even feedback, when it comes to knowledge of results, yes and no, don't give them any more than 50% of your feedback, especially young children, especially when they're learning something new. Of all the feedback you give, don't let that knowledge of results, that yes or no, correct, incorrect, go any higher than 50%. If there's anything we've proven with childhood learning, more than 50% and their motivation, go.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, what are our main things? Yes, please.
Just a question.
Yeah.
Number one you've got is motivation.
Yes.
So, with our topic that we're teaching, how would we best motivate the respective student or child?
This comes into course content. So this is when we've got to start to interweave how we teach and what we teach. So you've got to consider the benefits of what you're teaching.
Ah, what's in it for them, perhaps?
What's in it for them, and also what was in it for you? That there's, you're still an element of this learning environment, right? You're still an element of it. I know that with me, music can be a very self-indulgent thing sometimes, right? But for me, I studied music because I wanted to learn how to communicate with people in a different way. That was me. And how to give to my society in a different way. I didn't necessarily want to go off and perform in an opera house. I realized that I wanted to go off and use... No. I figured that I wanted to go off and perform for aged care.
Wow.
For people in aged care.
Excellent.
I found out that I wanted to go and develop lists of music for people that are culturally specific for people with Alzheimer's and dementia. You've got to pinpoint those. They're very different things. You got to really pinpoint all the nitty-gritty thing. That's why it's important for you to think about how you were motivated to learn, and then obviously adjust it to the age group, because some things we may not be able to discuss, especially when it comes to a topic like yours. There are probably some really personal reasons why you got into it. I'm guessing. I don't know.
Yeah.
But then talk to the children. Why would you want to learn this?
They say my mum forced me or my mum enrolled me.
Yeah.
Or they come from a Buddhist background.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because of sculpture class.
That's fine. I'm Italian. Mm. Right?
You go to
the grew up
church.
Listening to opera
you
on the radio.
I picked you for a Greek.
Curly hair.
Yeah.
I get that. Yeah. I get that. Yeah. I get many random things. But I listen to opera on the radio all the time. I had uncles playing the piano, accordion, and that's why I play it. But surely, Laura, there's got to be something, some other reason. I don't know. I don't think so. I don't want to be here. Surely I want to be at the beach, right? Do something else. Try to really have fun with them when you talk about what motivates them. Even if you spend half a lesson just talking about why they would really want to do this, and get them thinking, and don't let them just talk about parents.
Yeah.
Move through it. If there's anything you, and I, as I said, don't push instruction, don't push modeling too much, and certain types of feedback, but the one place where you're allowed to push it is motivation.
Push it.
Because motivation can't harm anyone, unless we go into the punish reward area.
No, we won't go there.
Don't go there. Don't go there. No. So they're your five main things. So play around with them. Really think about it.
Another question.
Yeah, please.
Would a child learn better and quicker if they were having fun?
Motivation.
Yes.
Motivation. So there's this whole... I just... when I first moved to Canada, I was very lucky to... I started meditation there, and my teacher invited me to her home, and I met her daughter, and she's in outdoor education. I was like, outdoor education is such a sport. She went... No, don't say it's just sport. It's not just sport. Outdoor education is this beautiful field of learning that human beings used to do. And it was on the story that you told earlier, which is where about taking children outside to learn, to have a lesson.
That's what in Greek, schooling means leisure in actual fact.
Yes, that's right.
And if you grab a hold of that, then you've got some idea of what passing the message on it is about. I won't use the word teaching.
Yes. Yes. Yes, that's true. That's true. They do. They do. So they take, in outdoor education, they take children outside for classes. They get them out smelling the fresh air and all the things that are good for them, not circulated air inside all the time. But they made it fun. They were outdoors. And they got to do lots and lots of different activities.
They call
so whatever
it for the
way,
learning environment.
Yes, that's right. They do. They do. They do. So when we think about our five main ingredients, when we think about motivation especially, something that will help you for yourself and for your students, one of the last things to talk about is goal setting. And this is where we come to what you spoke about with learning outcomes. Now look, learning outcomes, it's a whole other debatable topic. However, there is a reason why we do things, and there is a reason why we learn certain things, and there are generally goals. Like at the end of this lesson, I hope that you will remember at least just the five words. It's only a short amount of time, but I'm repeating those words because I want you to remember those words. That's my goal for you, right? for children, setting small, I repeat, small, simple, gradually making them more difficult tasks.
Achievable goals.
Yes, achievable goals. Well done, nice. Is so important. If you go, oh, I might give them something very tricky this week, just because you want to give them something tricky, don't do it. Unless you really know, yeah, I think they're collectively ready to move on to something a little bit more hard, then do it. Try to make those goals fun. Whatever you do, outline the goals early when you're talking about motivation. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? So goals are really important. Motivation is really important. Otherwise, they're not going to listen to a thing you say. It's going to go through one ear and out the other, especially children. Okay? Are there any questions? Because that is a lot of info, and I'm not giving you a good example of how to teach in this time frame.
Is one of the five perception?
Yes, perceptual training.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you want to speak on that, or is it...
Perceptual training? About asking the... Yeah, so perceptual training has to do with asking the student what they heard, what they see, what they feel. That's perceptual training, and that's linked. So I could draw you a big spider web about of how these things are all linked together.
I could.
Yeah. Would you like? Do you like spider? Oh, this might be.
I'll move everything away.
This might be
anything you like. Just
draw.
Doesn't matter.
Okay.
The black one's the best. The black text is the best.
But you cannot wipe them out.
Oh, wonderful.
The blue one will be fine on the right hand.
Yeah,
okay. Motivation, which is the most important one, right?
Yep.
Yep.
Sure?
Mm-hmm.
Instruction. And what's important about instruction? What's something you should...
Short and sweet.
Yes. Instruction, then?
Modeling.
Modeling,
demonstrating.
Modeling, then?
Feedback.
FB. And do that.
That's
feedback.
Perception.
Thank you. Perceptual training. Perceptual training. Yeah. That's right. Oh, that's all fine. Yes, that's all fine. Okay, so the most important one?
Motivation.
Why?
Because without it, then they won't learn anything.
They won't learn anything, meaning the rest of this will be meaningless.
That's right.
Yeah. Great. And what are you meant to do with that? You're meant to have fun with that as teachers. Enjoy it. If there's any time to really have fun with those kids, get them thinking about why they're learning, why they're in your classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Instruction, yes. Short, simple instructions. That's going to possibly be, along with feedback, the two most difficult things for you to navigate. Because they're possibly the most obvious things. Teachers give instructions, teachers say yes or no, right? Yeah. Modeling. Again, in your subject, there may be very little, not entirely sure. Depends on the activities you do. I don't know, you could think of an activity where modeling does help, right? I mean, other than setting an example as a teacher, if there are other things that you're demonstrating, modeling, consider why you use it. But like you did, you gave me a little bit of instruction and you modeled. And for me, that was great. I liked that. But that's because I know how I learn. All right? Feedback. What are the two types of feedback? What were they?
Knowledge of results.
Knowledge of
results.
And knowledge of performance. Knowledge of results is?
Whether they're right or they're
yes.
wrong.
Yes, perfect, correct, incorrect. There is no right, wrong, maybe. Yeah. And knowledge of...
Feedback is just an opinion from the expertise or an experienced person.
The knowledge of results is. Knowledge of results is. But knowledge of performance isn't. That's why it's so important. Knowledge of performance is giving that power to the child. You're telling that child what they did, because they need to develop their own type of feedback. Then you will slowly say yes and no, correct, incorrect. Again, that is your opinion, but that's what we're left with. In your subject, it's up to you as the teacher to say yes or no. Otherwise, what's that student learning? Right? Yeah. But there's a specific balance that you've got to find between knowledge of results, we just say KR, and knowledge of performance. And with children, this one is very important. And this one here, really, if you can, keep it below 50% for children. Okay?
It's not the results driven.
Sorry?
It's not the result.
That's right. Not results driven.
It's the process.
Because if you... Perfect. Because slowly, once you use all of these, the child's going to slowly be able to detect it on their own. Yes or no. You must give them knowledge of results. You have to build their own internal reference of correctness, which we just call IRC. We say IRC. I'll just pop it up here. Right? So that they can go home, and when they're doing their homework, they can think about whether that's, is that right or wrong, correct, incorrect, why, and they're getting the why from this. They're not getting it from this. And that's the big important point. If you're going to give a student this constantly, they're not going to be able to go off and do anything on their own without you. Ever. Because this is where they get the why did I do something wrong? Or why did I do something right? And most importantly, you're letting them decide why. Over time, you give them your opinion, you help them to express themselves about what they think they did. Yeah? And the last bit, perceptual training, which is a really beautiful one, I find. It's a really beautiful one, and we're not taught that enough as teachers in general. We're not. And how you balance these is really important. Instruction and feedback, in the research that I've done and many of my colleagues have done here and overseas, we've found that instruction and feedback are given the most. Sadly, teachers over-instruct, which creates too heavy a cognitive load for children. It's too heavy. I know that instruction is important. I know that descriptions are important.
You said a word there, cognitive.
Cognitive.
Cognitive science, yes.
Yeah. And this is where it's coming from. That's where it's coming from. So part of my research is in neuroscience. But it's also looking at old practices and how we talk. This isn't just pure science. I guarantee you, I'm not just giving you pure science. Pure science is showing that humans knew what to do from the beginning of time. We just lost our way.
There was a chap in Egypt, I think, about 3,000 odd years ago that worked out the circumference of the circle.
That's right. He did indeed. Indeed. Are there any other questions? Because now we're over time.
How can we instigate motivation? Like she was saying, they are here in the class because the parents send them for the class.
That's so, number one.
Yeah.
How
well,
can we
firstly,
spark the
firstly,
motivation?
Children won't know what motivation is. This is the number one thing. That's a very good question. This is the number one thing.
So should we mention from a different perspective, say like, oh, what would you want to take it home?
Yes. Yes. Make it fun. Say to them, why do you go to the beach? Why do you watch TV? Or why do you read a book?
What's enough for them?
What is yes? Get them. It's weird, but you've got to get them thinking a little bit selfishly. In order to then, because they're not going to understand really the difference between.
They can't even write motivation. They don't know what it's about.
No, they don't know.
Teach them how to be motivated and have fun and pick up the learning as well.
Yes. As someone who was a child musician who then developed into a professional musician, when I first started, my parents are Italian. I listened to this music. I thought I should do it. That's why I'm here. Then my teacher was like, into a child, but surely singing's fun. Surely you really enjoy the feeling of singing. And I was like, oh yeah, it makes me feel great. There was that little bit of selfishness, but I didn't know really what motivation was. And as I started to grow up, And I started to understand selfishness in society and in my life, and I started to define what that was as I grew up as a human being. I went, hang on, there are other types of motivation. Mm. And it started to change, and I started to think outwardly, oh, I perform music for the enjoyment of others, to give them happiness. Oh, I'm learning this because it will make me a better person to improve my society, my community. Perhaps as a child, it'll just be because I'll behave better. I'll be a better kid. Maybe. It could be that. And they're children, and that's understandable. But as long as you get them thinking about motivation and then and talk about community and outward reasons as well, of course. Don't just give them all the selfish reasons. You need a balance. But they don't know what motivation is. So that's your very first go-to. Now, you may be thinking, surely children will know what motivation is. They have it innately. They do have it innately. There is an element that they do, and I can see it ticking over in your brain. They do. But they're not made aware all the time of anything other than what they're given at home.
That's part of their survival skills.
It is.
The motivation at that level. But the motivation that we have all sitting here, as would-be teachers, is because it's a very real, like the where you got to in your singing, you know, and they dropped the seed of motivation, all of a sudden you worked out where it was.
Yeah.
So the subtle trick is to, not that I know much, but the subtle trick is for anyone that wants to learn something of any value is the motivation.
And we forget it so often.
We get in front of the class and go, yak, yak, yak.
You do. That's right. Me, for instance, okay, I finished my bachelor.
And, you know, that's not teaching.
No, it's not. I finished my bachelor and I had teachers telling me what to do all the time. And I was given so much feedback. I was given so yes or no's, do it this way. Yes or no, do it this way. No, do it this way. And I didn't know what I was doing wrong. And so I lost my confidence and I forgot why I loved it. And I, sadly, was one of the musicians who became very sick with stress. Right? I did. I became very, very sick and I left it. So a child will leave or they'll lose focus or their grades will go down and then their parents are and they may react. Who knows? There are always going to be children who it takes time for them to learn more than others. There's always going to be that element, and that element you won't be able to help. You're meant to just simply guide them gently. Never push a child if they're a little bit too slow. Obviously, give them challenges. Don't push them, because we all learn differently at the end of the day.
I think it's important to put ourselves, you know, the first thing is actually to have empathy and to put ourselves in the child's shoes.
Yes.
In that position and in their position.
Yes, and that links on to something called, it's called predisposition to learning. If you ever, if you look up this area of research I'm talking to you about today, don't just look up human learning. Sadly, it doesn't come under that just yet. It used to, but it's not anymore. It comes under motor learning, and they refer a lot to sport, and they refer a lot to physical performance and music, but it is taught in every area, and in neuroscience. And it's coming into education. But there's something called predisposition. Every single one of you, predisposition, every single one of you has come in here today with a different history, a different background. You've learnt different things in lots of different areas. That has shaped your learning capability in here. I sadly can't attune how I talk to every single one of you, but I can try and attempt to make things clear and to steady my pace and to watch my content, how much I give you, as much as possible. There are going to be some of you to whom this may have been too slow. Many for whom may have been too fast because I tried to jam everything in here as much as I could. But you need to find a balance, and you're going to have these five-year-old kids having experienced many different things. Some probably experienced horrible things. Others probably didn't. Kids love different things, one different to the other. Some children may know more than two languages, more than one language. That innately helps their learning, especially children who speak two languages. So they may learn faster than a child who only knows one language. That is a very well-proven thing. Predispositions to learning are going to affect how each one of those children learns. However, you can't change their history. You can only change what you do in that classroom. So you've got to consider things like homework. What's homework for?
Torture.
Yes. Homework's torture.
Depends.
It depends on how it's structured and the amount you give them and why you give it to them. If you motivate them, if there is a really good reason, they're going to do it. I'm not going to go home and go, yes, no, A, B, C, choose one, choose that one. Okay, I get to go to bed now, I get to watch a TV show. No. So predispositions to learning are really important. They're important to acknowledge, but sadly we can't change them. And that is linked to motivation. That will always, always influence how a child's motivated. Does that make sense?
Mm.
There are a lot of things for you to think about.
And there's a
there
lot
are a lot of things
for
you to think about.
They get into
a lot of in habits.
Period. But you know, it's like an actress, if you will. You go into a room of X amount of people with many types of characters in there.
Yeah.
Like making a cake, as you initially
That's
said.
That's right. With all your ingredients.
And if you put too much sugar, the cake's a flop.
Yeah.
And if you put too much salt, the cake's a flop.
That's right. But every child is a different. Well, you can't say food item, can you? That's horrible. But
they're unique.
They're a unique muffin. So let's go with that. Yeah, and every muffin's different. Every single one. Okay.
We had a TED talk this afternoon, and it was on what makes a good teacher. So he listed all these things about being chilled out and being calm and
sing the good song.
And that was the last one, you know, a good teacher sings. So
I like that.
That's probably what you
I like
do.
That. Well, music does highlight the entire mind for many different reasons. And it's beautiful if you read into why. It's really extraordinary. But it does highlight the entire mind.
Can you give us a tiny synopsis?
A tiny synopsis as to why. Well, if you think about music, we listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We watch performances.
Mm-hmm.
This part. Then sometimes there are lyrics involved. There's definitely different sorts of pitches. It's not always navigated by our ears. It's also around this area.
Mm.
And there's a lot of emotional reaction.
Yeah, like where you
come
from.
Oh, that's
an
extraordinary... Yeah, where you come from, the sounds that you grew up with. That for some reason, this note makes you feel this way, and this combination of notes makes you feel that way. It highlights every area of your brain because your whole mind is required to react in order to interpret this entirely different and extraordinary language that every human being can somehow understand. Yeah.
Can you actually, two things. Can you please, Kylie, sing, because I'm actually curious, you know, you sing in nine different languages. The first thing is actually, can you give us some examples, please? And the other one
of?
She wants to be your audience. She wants to be your fan.
My singing?
Yeah, we want to see an amazing performance.
Oh, man.
I have to say that to
Come on. In Italian.
Yeah.
Time to say goodbye.
No.
That's so traditional.
No. I don't sing opera anymore.
I like that song, you know, Friend for Life, the Olympic song.
Yes.
I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know it. I don't sing opera anymore. I've
Professor
gone into
Higgins.
Jazz.
Oh, really?
You
can
sing
jazz?
Yes,
it's
jazz
time.
I love it.
Summertime.
Summertime.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Anything if you're comfortable. And misbehaving.
And misbehaving.
You can't do summertime. That's such a
good
song.
She's
going to
show us.
Summertime.
Yeah.
And the living is easy. That one?
Yeah.
It's easy.
I don't know it very well.
Yeah.
I don't know that very well. I probably only know that much.
Okay, any other one will do. Just one.
Sorry,
Lord.
Whatever
you feel
comfortable. But time.
It's
time.
It's all
we
all
want to be your fans.
I'm misbehaving.
I'm misbehaving.
Yeah,
just like what I sang. I got the world on a string, sitting on a remote, got the string wrapped around my finger. Yeah? What about that one?
Yeah.
That's really hot. Yeah. Jazz is basically talking. But
just say
anyway, there you go. There's a taste.
Okay, also, another question that I always wanted to know, that, you know, like with those singers who actually sing different languages, do they understand? Do you understand?
Ah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So another thing I do is I do Italian diction coaching. So for singers, we have coaches for different languages. For opera singers, they have to know what they're singing about in order to play their character.
Mm-hmm.
However, we can't require a singer to learn fluently, to be able to fluently speak 8 languages.
Mm.
There were several languages. I mean, we had to sing not just Italian, French, and German. There's Czech, because we're dealing with some very old music. Russian, Japanese, Spanish, Welsh.
Japanese?
Yeah,
of course.
I can't remember much, please. I'm not even going to try. But we do have to learn.
Wow.
So what we train students to do is we train them to read that language as well as possible, and we train them to learn how to conjugate in the language so that they can go off and translate things, so they can slowly learn. And there are resources available for them too. Yeah. Okay, any other questions?
When you just mentioned about the music can motivate a different part of the brain, was it just the singing or music in general?
Singing is innately special because it is the one instrument that can communicate text. Yeah, so instrumental music is always going to highlight the brain. Always. Beautiful. If you can play instrumental music for children, do it. But if you can incorporate music with lyrics, singing, it's even better, because you're also lighting up a certain other element of understanding, which is a different type of language.
Vivex.
Right?
Mm.
So, hey, if you can play guitar and sing, do it. Do, with young children, it's wonderful.
There's a bodily sensation too, isn't there, where you, sometimes if you listen to the human voice and the acoustics are just right,
are not in here,
you can really feel the resonance. I know for myself, I felt that resonance in my body.
Mm.
So it becomes an all over experience, doesn't it? It's not
That's
just
right.
a mental how you
That's
think
right.
about it.
If you look it up, if you look up anything to read, look at and a colleague of mine has done a talk on it. You can find a video on YouTube. She talks about music giving you the chills. It's a whole area called the chills in music. It's an extraordinary read, and how different combinations of intervals between sounds really highlight that. So for children, music is brilliant in any subject.
Thank you very much.
No, my pleasure.
Laura, I feel that we should have met this second 2 hours.
I'm sorry.
Thank you very much for sharing your wisdom and experience.
If we clap loud enough, can we have an encore?
Yay!
Students next door are having classes, so you can just calm down.
My bad. Sorry, I have a loud voice.
Thank you.
Oh,
well,
you're coming back.
Can we have a quick break before the next session? Stacey will take you for
Try to meet in the highway hall.
Yeah.
Stacey, you can have as long as you want.